The date is September 28th, 2021, which means it's time for two things. One, Christmas decorations in the stores. Two, another episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. October is almost here, and with October comes a visit from one of our favorite comedy friends. October 1st through the 3rd, the DC Improv Lounge will host, once again, our good buddy, Mike Fenoya. We at the DC Improv really got to know Mike thanks to one of the greatest club comedians of all time, Dave Attell, who comes to the club every year, brought Mike a few times as his feature act. We liked Mike so much, we started bringing him back to headline our lounge showroom. He's done it three or four times now. Always a good time, always a ton of fun. Great guy, great show. When Mike's not busy doing his own thing, he's actually part of the team at Impractical Jokers. He's one of the people who helped put together that smash hit show on True TV. Mike is also one of the biggest music fans we know. He is a compulsive follower of the band Phish, having seen them dozens and dozens of times live in concert. He also has a podcast. It's called Comes a Time. It's hosted by Mike and the guy who is the current bass player for the Grateful Dead. They have all kinds of interesting guests. And best of all, Mike joins us now via Zoom. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's so nice to see you. How are you?
We're hanging in there. It is what it is. The world's going forward. That's a terrible answer. I'm fine. That's the answer.
I hope it's going forward. Yeah, it's going. Let's put it that way.
I'm trying to think last time we saw you. I know we had you on a virtual show a couple of months back, but I can't remember. You didn't even make it down for the drive-in show, did you? Or was that, were you for that?
No, I did not, but we did. We talked about it. Yeah. And then it was a kind of last year's decision-making stuff was kind of like how I imagine Oregon Trail people made decisions. When you get there, you're a whole other group of people, you know, like, well, I have to pack my dog and my family and, you know, whatever. But no, it was, we did the Zoom. That was fun. That was really, thank you very much for putting that on. That was neat.
You know, it seems like such a distant memory now that we did all these Zoom shows over the pandemic when the venue was closed. And it was fun to do them, and it's one of those things where I don't know if we'll ever end up doing them again. It's like they were fun. There was a built-in audience. There were people who were like fanatic about coming to watch these shows, and now it's just kind of, you know, disappeared into the ether as we've gotten back to normal. You know, so
I mean, I have to say, I kind of, there's some things I think I liked about it, aka no traffic and yeah. No pants. That was a lot of fun, but I will tell you that it's I'm extremely excited for this weekend, and I love you guys so much, and I love the club, and the crowds are always so smart and fun, and it's, you're just one of those rooms that figured out how to do it right. And it was like when we couldn't be there, it was those rooms that we thought about, or I at least can only speak for myself, but it's like, you know, that thought about that, like, man, I really miss everybody down there, and it's just, I'm so stoked to be back.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Everyone struggled in different ways with the pandemic or dealt with different things and having their lives kind of curtailed. You had a lot of things that you're really into were basically wiped off the face. First off, stand-up comedy. But then the other thing, for people who don't know, you're a tremendously huge music fan. And not just a music fan, you love going to concerts.
Love going to concerts. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, like it's medicine for me, I think. And that was really, really hard. And, you know, just like comedy kind of adapted and reacted. A lot of the bands that I like, I mean, wearing a Grateful Dead shirt as we, you know, them, Phish, some of the other bands that I like, they went back to the archives and back to the old days. And every, you know, Phish did it on Tuesdays, the Dead did it on Fridays. They would play an entire show from the past. Mm-hmm. And you could donate to charities of the, you know, of the week and sit on your couch and cry and call it, text your friends and get stoned by yourself and go, I miss you guys, you know. But like comedy, music has come back, and I've gone to, there's a lot of clubs that I feel like are outdoor venues that have really figured out how to do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just going, maybe if it's an earlier curfew, or if it's less people, or if it's, you know, keeping the shows outdoors or whatever. And it's been fun. I mean, I've gone to a couple concerts, and it's just been like a reunion,
Yeah.
emotional thing, but also kind of like maybe I'm okay with going to less, you know? I think
Yeah.
that the pandemic brought out the inner like old guy.
It accelerated that slide into yeah, I
Yeah.
feel that way about a lot of things too. It's like,
For
yeah.
those of you that don't know me, I had a full head of hair in 2018.
What was the first concert back when you were trying to figure out, okay, I'm gonna dip my toe in the pool. What was the first one back for you?
Well, you know, it was this band, this kind of younger band called Goose, and it's like a they started in Connecticut and they're kind of in that jam band lineage or whatever, but there was nothing to go to. And my friend liked them and he said, let's go check them out. There was a farm up in the northwestern part of Connecticut, hours drive. And but it was just something to do. And they were doing it like 8 by 8 blocks of
Oh,
space.
you had like a grid that you could stay in
It was like a Tom Petty. Yeah, it was like a checkerboard video kind of thing. And like the next person was like 16 feet away or whatever. And it was only like 2 hours or whatever. And you stood in your space and it was like being at like a football field and kind of far distance. But since then, since everything's kind of opened back up, like I went to Phish in Atlantic City. That was a lot. That was kind of a crazy. It was on the boardwalk on the
Yeah.
ocean. And I kind of like just stood in the water, like with a mask on. And I don't know, man. It's freaking, people
Atlantic
are gross.
City, is it, you know, I'd say regardless of the year, wearing a mask in Atlantic City isn't the worst idea, you know?
It had rhinestones on it. And,
Sure. Yeah.
but yeah, it's people are gross, man.
Yeah.
Pandemic or not, people are disgusting. And I've always felt that. And I've always thought that. And, you know, traveling is kind of like a, ugh. But, yeah, I've been to a couple concerts since. I went to see the Dead and Company a couple times. The lead singer from Phish did a little solo run, and it's been cool. But it's been, you let go and you start having a great time again, and then you get that little critic that's like, "Hey, don't
Yeah.
forget, invisible virus hanging around behind you." You know,
God's
like.
gonna punish you. Come
Yeah,
on. What do you
totally,
want,
totally.
man?
But hey, you know what? Like, whatever. You got to kind of live, I guess, a little, but.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to get back to live music, but beyond that, you did have at least one other coping mechanism, something you started last August. A lot of people, I'm sure, miss their favorite bands, whether it's Dead and Company, whether it's Phish. And I think you did the most sensible thing, which is you started a podcast with the bass player from the Grateful Dead, which is just naturally what anyone would do in this situation. So
Man.
tell me about the Comes a Time podcast, because this has been going for more than a year now, and it's you have such
Yeah.
an interesting, eclectic a range of guests, but tell me about kind of how this came to be.
Well, I had a podcast called Amigos that I was basically music and comedy and kind of like the blend of the two and the culture that surrounds it. You know, I mean, me and Oteil Burbridge, who's the Oteil and I, English major, we talk about people that are kind of like tuned to the right frequency, people who believe that there's UFOs, people who believe that psychedelics are probably good for you, people who believe in common sense and human rights and that the left and the right isn't the only choice and all that crap. You know what I mean? Like we kind of go that path, and people who have had like mystical experiences and people who have had, an interesting run of things with this life, you know? And not just musicians, not just comics, not just people in the astrophysicist and psychedelic world, but a blend of everybody. But I got to know him. He came on my old podcast, and we were supposed to talk for like a half hour. And he was in between shows at the Garden and Nassau Coliseum, and I met him. We hung out, first time ever meeting him, and like 3 hours later, we're like the best of friends. Like it was amazing, just an instant connection. And what was cool about it is he's a musician, been a professional touring musician for years. He turns to comedy for relief when he's on the road. When I'm on the road, I turn to music for relief. So it was kind of this yin yang thing where we were like, wow, you utilize what I do as a kind of breath of fresh air and vice versa. And we just kind of like talked about a couple mystical, kind of psychedelic or otherwise experiences, and it just an instant friendship began. And we kept in touch. He came to see me at the Cellar right before the last show at the Garden, the Allman Brothers. which turned out to be like a super spreader event or whatever, but he came to see me and we kept in touch and we were like, we should start a podcast one day. And then the world handed us a year off and we were like, hey, no better time than now. We kind of thought about it, talked about it. It just lined up perfectly. And we had access to everyone. I mean, no one wasn't available, you know? So yeah. It was like, yeah, let's talk to all the founding members of the Grateful Dead. Let's talk to a 97-year-old, you know, dream telepathy, you know, scientist. Let's talk to, you know, like George Wallace and Roy Wood and Ronnie Chang and Jessica Kirsten and like Tom Papa and some of my favorite comics, you know, and just about the human condition. And like, Oteil nailed it perfect that like the theme of the podcast is like, how did we get here and where do we go from here? And that's kind of what I think we're all going through in a way, you know, and in a way that's kind of what I hope my set's about a lot now is kind of like just, you know, this is, we're different people now, man. This is, it's 2.0 for all of us. So it's kind of fun to, and what's so cool about it is that we've developed a really great fan base that has expressed gratitude in us having the conversations that we're having, because I don't know. I mean, I think it's like vulnerability is a pretty important thing right now and we all have to kind of be there for each other. So it's been really great. Like I'll shut off the, like Bob Weir's the founding member of the Grateful Dead, you know, and I'll just shut my laptop and I'm alone in my living room. Like, yeah, I guess I just met Bob Weir. Over. Like what a weird, it's like a Jetsons episode, you know, it's very crazy. You know, but it's been fun. It's been a blast.
I know you've been around music so much. I'm sure you know a lot of musicians even before you started this podcast. But you know, working on the other half of Oteil, he's a touring musician. You're a touring comedian. Those two worlds. How much is the touring entertainer? I guess how much do those sensibilities meet, or is there some stuff of the music side of entertainment and touring that kind of you didn't realize as a comedian and vice versa? How similar are those circles?
That's a great question. And it's something that we've talked about quite a bit. And I think that we share, let's start with the differences. Cause you get to tour with a group of people as a musician,
yeah, right.
Which is a blessing and a curse. I think in some ways, I mean, being alone is a double-edged, I don't want to say double-edged butter knife, really. it is what you make your, like me going into DC, I'm like, all right, I have to get out and go to some museums. There's some I really, really want to check out that I haven't yet. But will next week I go, man, I didn't do anything again. I just stayed in my room, you know, like there's those things where you plan, like I'm looking forward to not only the shows, but like visiting the Capitol and all this other, you know? And I think when you're preparing as a musician or a comic to go on the road, you got all these plans of, I'm going to get up, I'm going to do yoga, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to bring food so I don't eat crap, all, you know, whatever. I'm going to get to bed early after the show. No, you're up till 4 a.m. watching, you know, Law and Order and ordering room service and whatever, you know? So I think we kind of joke like how similar you are on the road. There's a nice part about it because we haven't done it in a long time and now we're back able to do it. But then there is those like creature comforts of like just being home that, you know, we miss. But the level he's at with music, though, is like, I mean, and they had to be very careful because they went pretty much like hotel to tour bus to stage to tour bus to hotel, because hundreds and hundreds of people are employed and they're running a, you know, huge risk with people getting, you know, you have to test every day and all that. But yeah, there's the kind of funny thing is that we need those distractions, right? Like I'll go back and listen to tons of music. I have music playing all day, every day in every room. Like those speakers that follow your phone and turn on when you go in rooms, like I've been dreaming of that since I was a kid, you know? So like my hotel will constantly be have music on and his is comedy and all that. So it's kind of cool that we, you know, can utilize those differences, but the road's tough.
Yeah.
But it's, I will say, and this is not blowing smoke, going to clubs like yours is a breath of fresh air because you feel like you're going home. Like the staff is phenomenal. It's like picking up literally right where you left off last time. And I cannot wait to see everybody. Like that to me is like that. That's so important.
It is one of those things that, you know, when we were gone for 13 months. And so it was just one of those things where, yeah, you take it for granted. You go in every day and you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm back at it. You know, I'm working at a sound booth and doing all this stuff. And then, I was actually quoted in a newspaper article when they did the reopening. It was like, I said, that first time that it came back and the music started playing and the show started, I started crying. I cried at nothing. I cried at like maybe Finding Nemo. And I cried when I saw, I cried when I saw my dad cry. Like I saw my dad cry at his mom's funeral. And that was like, we were like, what's going on? Something is wrong with the universe.
No.
And so me and my brothers just lost it. So I remember that. But those are like the two times I can remember like crying, you know.
And the, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was one of those things like, oh yeah, you forget how special this can be, you know. So
you should watch that movie Soul, that Pixar movie Soul. Yeah. Check that out yet?
Oh, not yet. I know it's Donnell Rawlings does one of the voices, so I want to check it out. Yeah.
Bawled my eyes out.
Yeah.
Bawled my eyes out.
You know what? I take it back. The opening of Up. I almost cried at the opening of Up too.
I'm a mush though. I cry all the time. I'm like I'm like a walking contradiction. Like I'll be crying. Like when you see like someone, an athlete or a celebrity, just go out of their way to like make someone feel good.
Oh yeah.
And they share it as like a part of like, you know, SportsCenter or whatever. Like I'll just start like, like one of those, you know, and if my wife comes in and like starts talking, I'm like, would you shut up? I'm watching the thing. And like, you know, but I'm crying and I'm mad at the same time. And it's like, what's wrong with me? But yeah, like going back and like getting on stage for the first time live doing comedy was like a real kind of, wow, like missed it a lot because we didn't know what we had no idea when it was coming back or if or what. I mean, man, the whole thing. But just to be able to kind of walk back up and see a crowd, and the crowds love it, and they're just happy to be back, and that's so important, and so grateful for that too, you know.
Well, as much as we miss live comedy, and it's great that it's back, I want to ask you about one other thing you work on that I will confess. So, for people who don't know, you also work as a producer for the Impractical Jokers, right? So, yeah, right.
Well, so yeah. Right now, what I do for this show is there's a couple different shows in the Impractical Joker world, and I'm one of the producers of Inside Jokes and After Party, and then I work on the regular show as well in certain capacities. But
been
a couple of years now.
So this is a show that's been on for more than 200 episodes, and it was one of those things that if you had True TV on your dial, you'd flip past, and that would be like the only thing on True TV, right? And so my wife and I work in comedy, and we are pretty jaded. And for years, like we had never watched, like honestly, until I would say before the pandemic, we had never watched a single episode of Impractical Jokers. We knew it was a big deal. We knew they were selling out theaters. We knew they had a cruise. We knew people would cancel on us to go on the Impractical Jokers cruise. We knew that would happen.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We were like, oh, sorry, I got a better offer. I'm going with you. I was like, okay. And we had never watched it. And then it got to be pandemic time and we were around the house and you can't go anywhere. And we was like, let's give this a try. We know a lot of people associated with the show. We know Mike writes, you know, works on the show. It's like, it's got to be pretty funny. We've probably watched every single episode. It is one of the things that we have, like I said, we're these crusty old jaded people who watch comedy all the time. I swear to God, it's now like if you need background noise, that's what we put on in our house. It's one of the funniest things to us, and it's given us so much happiness over the last year. So I wanted to ask you, what's it been like for that? Because they've had that's been a big shift. I know some of the things like Inside Jokes, that's working on an episode that's already been produced, right?
But
the new stuff, they've had to adapt so much to what's been going on in the world. How's that experience been in the last year?
Well, I'd have to say that, like, you know, most of the stuff that I've done in the past year has been more in that post-production realm, but with the guys, and I keep very close. It's like being on that show is kind of like, you know, it's like a family because it's a whole unique thing. I mean, the camera guys know the audio guys, know the locations guys, the location guys know that, like, and everyone's kind of like, it's like a Jenga puzzle all the time, you know? And it's like, you need everybody to kind of be breathing at the same, you know, not too hard, not too soft, but to adapt and react and find locations that were suitable and to be able to sort of keep it alive while it could be. I mean, because, you know, you go back, what, season two, season three, whatever, the guys weren't known.
Yeah.
And you would put your Joe would put his nose on a guy. You put your nose on a guy now, you're getting, you know, tased. But I mean, it's amazing to see the way that, you know, they were able to utilize Zoom, utilize, you know, the conference room type setting or the, so a lot of it was like going back to the playbook that, you know, the challenges and the punishments that worked before and just seeing how to either shift them or look at them from a different lens and see how do we kind of make it more of a solitary experience, like a one-on-one or a, you know, whatever. And I think the guys did a fantastic job. I mean, I think that the season nine stuff was, I mean, it made me laugh and it gets like, you know, interesting that like, I know jaded comedy folks, you know, like watching it early on and then getting involved in it. And then watching it from this different perspective, I'm just, the guys have really kind of, it's that 10,000 hours thing, you know, where you do something long enough and you become an expert. It's like nothing can phase them. They can take, they adapt and react and on a whim, like turn out hilarity, like all the time. And it's just amazing. We're always just looking at each other kind of like, they did it again. So it's really an honor and it's been a blast and they're great guys. And it's been a lot of people. I'm happy a lot of people got to we all had this. I watched The Wire for the first time, start to finish.
Very similar show. Basically the same. Yeah. Also a lot of hidden cameras.
No, but I mean, my point is that like, you know, being stuck kind of sitting at home, you're like, what haven't I checked out that I've been told, dude, you got to check it out. So I think a lot of people finally got to see it in that binge. And it's a, like you said, it's on in the background. Like it's, I can't tell you how many times I've been at like a dentist appointment and I see our show on and I just kind of you know, pull my mask up and go in the corner and just watch people watch it. And it's pretty exciting. It makes a lot of people happy. So that's what makes me happy, you know.
We particularly enjoyed the episode where you show up as a cop on camera.
Want to hear a funny story about that?
Sure.
We were shooting that and they said you know, so the guy, like I think it was psychoanalysis or something like that. The guys were posing as like therapists or psychoanalysts or whatever. And they said real quick, they're like, Mike, John, go to wardrobe. Like we had a little surprise planned and we went over there and the only pair of pants that they had was a size 46 or something like that, which is like, I'm gaining weight, but not that much, you know? So it was like those old 20s movies where you got to like hold your pants like in your hand, you know? So like right before I walked in the room, literally like wardrobe was like tying the pants tight on me. And then they opened the door and like we had to walk in. So it was like, this is weird. I was like, I hope this looks realistic. But yeah, it was pretty wild. So that was fun. I'm glad you got to see that.
Yes, we always look for that one. And I don't know if you know my wife, Allison, our niece was and her brother were on an episode.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the one there was a punishment where Q was having to ruin which baseball player was it? Was doing a signing autograph session and he had to ruin
Syndergaard?
No, it wasn't Syndergaard. That was the one in the outfit. Was it Tino Martinez? I'm trying to remember who it was.
Oh yeah.
And he had to take each thing that was getting signed and ruin it, and then they would of course replace it after the fact, but my brother-in-law brought his daughter to this thing and they were filmed for it, and it was one where Joe actually stopped them from ruining it because he said like, this is a cute little girl and like, you'll ruin her, don't do it. It's like, you don't understand. So we always get a kick when we see that one come on in the rotation.
You know what's great about them too is that like, they, you know, they've given me so many, I mean, just I can't even begin to like the opportunities, the like, I've performed with them, opening up for them on their tours, Constitution Hall, Radio City Music Hall right before the pandemic hit, Nassau Coliseum on New Year's Eve, like all these theaters and arenas, a Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, and It's hilarious because I'm up there going, I don't belong here. But they are so, you know, it's so sweet of them to kind of like, you know, bring their buddies along for the ride. So it's, yeah, it's been a real thrill.
You said you say you don't belong there, but at the same time, say so if someone like Oteil, I guess that is, it's such a different experience, that notion of a sea of people. You know, it's great to go into a comedy club and stand in front of 300 people or 60 people or whatever, but just to look out and just see like, oh yeah, there's more people here than I went to high school with, you know.
Oh,
like that's, yeah.
Yeah. And the way that I'm brought up on stage now, okay. So here's the thing, you know, this is for like the kind of behind the scenes stuff. Excuse me. When you are brought up on stage, there's a certain amount of time for you to walk to the microphone, right? Mm-hmm. But at a club, no problem. If you want to wait a little bit and cause dramatic effect and see how long they clap.
Do that right, last whatever. Line of blow in the green room, whatever it is. Yeah.
Or that last prayer. Or
sure, you're right.
That last time. But I remember I was doing Nassau Coliseum, and I was able to, it was on New Year's Eve, and I was able to bring my wife to the show, and she was sat like right up in front and whatever. And the thing that's kind of crazy is that you don't realize that the size of these places, you know, they're gigantic. The theaters I've done. I mean, I love the theaters we've done. I've gotten the chance to do some of the most beautiful theaters in this country with them. And I'm a theater geek in not theater on stage. I like the buildings.
Yeah.
Like I was walking around with the like mechanics at Radio City, just like that whole stage is on hydraulics. And I'm like, this is the craziest That's awesome. Thing I've ever seen. So anyway, you know, like when you're walking onto a stage at a club, you're like, okay, here, I have 30 seconds or whatever. Not even that 10 seconds to get to the microphone. It's no big deal. Then you get set up, you breathe, you look around, you adjust to the lights, whatever. The tour manager goes, are you guys ready for the Impractical Jokers? And you go, the whole Nassau Coliseum. Yeah. Well, before that, we're going to bring up and they go, you know, and it's just instant kind of, and they, but he's a sweetheart. He was doing it kind of, you know, to break my balls. And he brings me up, and the walk to the microphone was forever. The stage was the, you know, halfway through. And I'm like kind of walking, and then I'm getting nervous and I start to jog a little bit. And then I'm like, the applause is now totally stopped. It's a dead silent Coliseum. You know what I mean? So I just kind of go and I'm like, hi, Nassau Coliseum. How's everybody doing? And it just goes like all the way to the back of the room. And it's so like cavernous, and there's big fans on stage that are blowing cold air, and that's all I can hear. So I'm just going through my set, and I mean, fast as possible, like Micro Machines commercial fast. And I'm not getting any laughs, and I'm going like, like kind of in the middle, making all these weird noises. And I look, I get my wife somehow, miraculously, I catch my wife's eyes, and she's going, slow down like that. And I just listened to her, and I like took a beat, and I did a joke that I knew, you know, mathematically, I think it would work. And I did it. And then I waited for the applause, and then I got it. And it was so big and so different than a club. 'Cause the club, you get punched in the face immediately, or they're like, we're done with this guy. So I kind of had to like adjust to that. And man, it was the most terrifying experience. But also by the end of the set, I felt like I was just loosening up by my last joke.
Yeah,
I was
now like, I'm ready to let it rip. Let's go. Yeah.
So it was kind of neat. But it's like those little things where it's like that microphone's like, that's a 30-yard jog. Like I got to like, you know, by the time I got there, I was winded, you know. But it's just things like that I'll never, you know, I can't thank them enough for experience.
The real hero of that story, your wife. What a how great. Was she just in the front row catching your eye? Was that the deal?
She was, and she's been she's been a very honest. I brought her when we were dating to see me perform in Long Island, and I ate crap, dude. It was horrible. The first time she ever saw me, we were just dating. And I got into it with the crowd, and like, you know, I was hosting, and this table of 40 people were talking, and I told them to shut up, and they tore me up, and I tried to get back at them, and they just up one side of me, down the other. And I didn't know what to do. And I'm thinking, there's that girl I like in the corner watching me for the first time. And I walk back to the table after I bring up the feature, and I was like, that wasn't bad, right? And she goes, have you ever done this before? She goes, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And she brought me out in the hall and told me everything. She goes, first of all, you're playing with your shirt. You swear in between your jokes for no reason. You're doing this. And like all of a sudden I just heard like birds tweeting around my head. And I was like, this is the girl I'm going to marry. Like, this is exactly what I need in my life, is an honest, like she, and she just, she'll cut right through the, like, she does not, she pops balloons, you know?
Yeah.
So, I, for her, like, she was like, once you slowed down, it was really good. So I'm like, okay. So I always know I can trust her, assessment, you know?
Not to get too into the heavy side of things, but she's a healthcare worker. Is she doing all right? She hanging in there through all this? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, it's, they're the real heroes. So, I mean, it's just,
No, I think Mike Fenoy is the real hero. Let's be honest, really. No one's paying $20 to come out and see a healthcare worker at the DC Improv. Well, come on.
You'll be hearing stories about how I have made her pandemic. I think if she was doing the pandemic without me, you know, what's interesting is, I mean, that was the first, her and I lived separate for the first like 7 or 8 years of my marriage because of our careers. Like, I was down in the city and she was like up a little ways outside the city working at a hospital. And we kind of, after 8 years of marriage, decided we were ready to live together. So cool. And getting back, like in the pandemic, we were kind of like dating again. We both needed it, you know, like she would come home after, I mean, it was just insane. That whole year was just, it's just bananas. But things are getting a little bit, you know, for her. She's busy and she's smart and she's, you got a lot of responsibilities. But I'm trying to make her hours at home more enjoyable than I think I did a year ago. So that's all. That's it. I just try to, you know.
What are we talking? Are you putting on that cop uniform? What are you doing, Mike? That's very vague. Are we cooking?
We're
going
to have to tune in for the next episode. You're going to have to come to DC Improv and find out this weekend. Even How about that?
Even better.
Is that a good sales pitch there?
Fantastic. And of course, I will ask about the one other person in your family. How's the dog?
Oh, my little Charlie. She's amazing. She's actually in school right now. As I'm aging, I'm learning to admit what I don't know, and I don't know how to raise a puppy. So I said, let's just give her the schooling that she deserves. And the, you know, I just throw treats at every problem. And, she's in school right now. She's doing pretty good, actually. Like I have to say, I'm glad I don't have kids, 'cause I think I'd be the parent that, like peers in through the window to like make sure that my kid's being treated okay. I'm a mess, dude. The other day I dropped her off and then I like hung out because it was raining, and like she was out in the rain for a minute, and I almost went back in and was like, bring her inside. But I'm like, stop being an idiot. So yeah, well, she's amazing. She's my best pal.
That works out well, because if you're the creepy guy hanging outside a kid's school, that's a problem. But if it's a dog school, it's sort of acceptable,
right? You're still a little
right?
creepy, but it's a just, little. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one's calling
people
the cops.
People more feel bad for you than are scared of you. You know? But, man, I'm really stoked. Again, I can't tell you. Like, you guys are, you're like family. Ever since the first time I was there, you guys have always been so cool.
Oh, you're too kind, Mike. You're too kind. And we are definitely looking forward to seeing
you guys do it right, and you know it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, we're really looking forward to seeing this this Friday through Sunday. That's October 1, 2, and 3 in the DC Improv Lounge. Tickets at dcimprov.com. Last chance, Mike, if someone was listening to this and they weren't already convinced to come see you, what's the elevator pitch? Come on.
Oh, I mean, really? Are there worse things to do? I don't know. That's a hard thing to say. I'm going to be honest. That's all I can say. If you want to see some self-deprecating, you know, me telling you stories about how I've embarrassed myself over time, then I think you'll enjoy it. If you want to forget about yourself for an hour, how about that?
There you go. Even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, so great to chat with you, and we will see you in just a few days, Friday.
Thank you so much, brother.
Cool. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Mike Fenoya. Mike headlines the DC Improv Lounge Showroom October 1, 2, and 3. We're actually doing two shows each night. That's Friday through Sunday. So again, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. All the tickets are on sale at dcimprov.com. While you're over there, you can check out a little video clip of Mike, read a little bit about him, all that fun stuff. Go, I command you. And I will honestly confess, I am 100% a big Mike Fenoya fan. I have seen him a bunch of times. Maybe not as many times as he's seen Fish, but enough to know that it's always a great mix of stand-up comedy material and then just lighthearted, crowd work. He's really great at both. Seeing him up close in the lounge, great spot for it. Just really a good time. October 1 through 3 in the DC Improv Lounge. And oh yeah, if you want to follow Mike on social, it's just his name to find him on Twitter or Instagram. That's Mike Finoia, F-I-N-O-I-A. Again, Mike Finoia on either Twitter or Instagram. And with all that said, let's wrap this up. Our thanks to Mike Finoia for taking the time to chat with us. Our thanks to you for taking the time to listen. You only have one job left, and that is get to the DC Improv this weekend, October 1st to the 3rd, to see Mike Finoia in the DC Improv Lounge. Get over there, do it, make your life a little bit funnier. But hey, however you choose to spend your weekend, no matter where you go, no matter what you're doing, we sincerely hope you find some time to laugh. Thanks as always for hanging with us, and we'll see you next time on the other side.